This is a Collider.com audio interview.
That's a cute vest you have. What is
Thank you. There? This is Alexander McQueen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So how did you go about creating this role? Is this a part that's unusual in your lists of parts that you play?
Definitely. I kind of read the script and instantly, this is a role I had to audition for. This is a role that I knew that I would be up against huge obstacles to get, being a comedic actress, or at least deemed that way in the marketplace, and knowing that there were X number of very kind of celebrated, serious, inverted commas, actresses going in. So it was one of those situations where I read the script and I just thought, this is the take I want to. I don't want to play the cliche femme fatale. I don't want to come in and be the sexy, you know, the woman with a sexual appetite to who wants to take down this man. I want to come in and make her this big beating heart and innocent, a woman who has no identity, who mirrors the man she's with, who doesn't have an agenda. Because every character in the script has an agenda. I thought, how interesting if Lovely doesn't have one, if she's, you know, a victim of her own, you know, kindness. And so that was my starting point. And then, you know, I did a little bit of work and kind of went in there and thought they'll either like it or hate it. And I was lucky, and Scott totally really liked it. And
did you build your own backstory, though? Because I was never clear if she was Gary's girlfriend or how she got involved in this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, you do. Yeah, I built my own backstory.
What did you think?
I think she was Gary's girlfriend. And I think it was he was more of a paternal figure to her, someone who took care of her. And I think, again, she's someone who would see being a girlfriend as, she's the sort of type of woman that just wanted to, you know, please him and just to belong. She's someone who never really belonged. But I do think her feelings for Chris Pratt became genuine. I mean, that's how I wanted to play it. It's how it was the most, you know, challenging for me.
Were you surprised? Were you surprised that she left him? Because she seemed to be taken by him, but yeah, she won.
Well, there were other options. I mean, at one stage there was a scene where she warned him, but I felt I was very against that because I felt like once she warns him, she knows. I wanted to leave it more enigmatic. What does Lovely know? And so, I guess, she leaves him because she's scared. And the thing that was taken out of the film was that in that scene I had a massive bruise on my face where I'd been beaten by Gary, which is why I essentially leave. But that was taken out. And
well, there are signs that
I lost concentration. I thought about my cookie again. I was like, what am I talking about? There is a cookie.
Was there something that after the success of Wedding Crashers, was there something where you thought, no, I want to take on a specific role like this?
No, you know, I don't have a plan like that because I think that's a very scary way to live your life in any area. And so I just read the material, and I'm the most attracted to good dialogue. And Scott Frank's dialogue is just incredible. And you read great dialogue and you think, oh, please let me say this. Instead of half the time you're reading things going, how would I even deliver that line? Who would say that line?
You're dealing with a blonde guy and a brain damaged guy. So did you go study these kinds of people?
No,
and
that
really
was
feed off the two guys?
No, because I didn't want her to have any experience. That was the charm. I wanted her to see this blind guy for the first time and reach out and touch it, you know, have no clue how to, you know, like, and the best thing about acting with people with impediments, you know, people that are brain damaged or blind, is that it's in a weird way you're so much less exposed because Jeff's not looking at you, he's looking around, and you know, and Joe is looking through you. So this, in a weird way, there's less intimacy, which I found easier. I can't explain why. Just as a performer, I felt it was easier to tap into my emotions and much more relaxing than the full intimacy of another actor playing. You know, I loved it. I really loved it.
So how did you and Joe work, you know, in rehearsal? Did you guys talk about...
Well, that's what was great about Scott. We didn't I'm not a big fan of really overworking something till you know exactly who's going to do what at what time. And, you know, we worked in the way that we discussed, you know, our backstories and how our characters, you know, felt about, you know, just the history of everything. And then we kind of read things in a really gentle way and felt around them, but there was not the pressure of final product or, you know, there was no, I didn't make any decisions in rehearsal that I knew I would have to stick to on the day, or, and I left it so that my imagination was still alert and alive and excited by filming, instead of sometimes, you know, thinking, oh God, you know, we rehearsed for 2 hours and I probably did it 1,000 different ways and now I think that it's a wrap. Instead of thinking, yeah, I've got to go and shoot, you know, it just takes away your hunger. For me, sometimes, not all the time.
Regarding the scene where Joe Daniels' character tells yours that he was blinded by looking at the sun too long,
yeah.
What did you think your character's reaction said about her?
Well, that was interesting. That was a comedic choice that I made, and I thought they'll never put that in. That seemed to me like a good joke that I did on the day to amuse myself. I did other versions of that, but seeing it in the movie, I thought it worked really well. It just, I mean, you know, she's not the brightest spark in the shed. Is that even the term? The sharpest tool in the shed? But it's really confirmed in that little moment, and I think it's very endearing. But I suppose it's what you took away from it. Did you hate it?
Oh, no. I didn't hate it. It's just I didn't, up until that point, I didn't think that she was that, I guess clueless was the word that
yeah.
you used earlier.
Yeah.
Because she is part of the kind of mastermind plan. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what's interesting about this character, is that everybody feels very differently about her. And I can see as I'm talking about her, you know, in with certain, you know, journalists, that people feel, you know, that it's not not what they saw. And that's what's, I think that's what's great about the movie.
Do you think she actually knows what's going on?
No, I think she finds out when she sees the guns.
Mm-hmm. That's what makes her leave.
And I think she could possibly know somewhere inside of herself, but she's just one of those classic, you know, characters that are kind of in denial and go about their lives without really thinking, you know.
In your own opinion, do you think she goes back to him in the end? I mean, not in the movie, but in your own...
No. I hope not.
Oh, okay.
No.
She does feel guilt.
Yes. She definitely feels guilt.
Did you have to do a certain scene with Joe and when you were auditioning for them? You did audition, right?
Yeah, we did the scene where she tells him about seeing him at the hockey game.
Oh, yeah.
And I had one of those divine moments where his shoelace just came undone during the audition, which is such a blessing. Because if you get the opportunity to do something real within, you know, the structure of a fake scene, it just connects you to the reality of the truth of the scene. So his shoelace came undone, and I was able to be really maternal and loving with him and do it up very gently. And that's what I think that was really helped, you know, my angle on the character.
Are you still writing, and how did those teenage novels happen?
I'm not writing trashy chick lit anymore. But I am. I wrote with Amy Poehler this this treatment called Groupies, this great female-driven comedy that we set up at Paramount. And since then, I developed another project called Cookie Queen that we set up at Universal, not with Amy, with another couple of male writers. So I'm still being creative and getting to, you know, moving more into the production and making sure that I have a little more power and control over my career.
But the books did okay, didn't they?
Yeah, the books did really well. Still. Well, at that time, for me, yeah.
And this was in Australia.
Yeah. But, you know, it's great writing, as you guys all know, but it's also quite a little antisocial. Not antisocial, but you're alone in
isolating.
A room. You know, it's isolating. And I've discovered with age, I was very young when I wrote with my mother, and so it was more collaborative, and I had a lot of, you know, help. And I really love creating characters, and I love, you know, the following a structure. It's exciting writing. I mean, you know, acting, you're told where to stand and what to say, and you've already been cut out of the first, you know, the exciting bit where you could go anywhere and do anything with any character. But ultimately, I'm too gregarious.
How old were you?
I started when I was 18, my first book. But before that, I was in, like, you know, the special writing classes after school, and I'd always written, and my mum wrote, and I always wanted to be a writer. But then I just realised that I like to, you know, play dress-ups too.
Does writing with Amy, maybe, you know, like that improv style, does that help with, you know, being close to Sasha and his improv style?
No. Totally different, you know, things.
But, I'm just trying to, you know, like, how that style is completely, it is improv, though, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, you just think on the spot and writing comedy.
Yeah, but I think with all writing, you think on the spot, really. I mean, then you go back and make sure it all fits together. But you know what? Amy and I wrote a lot of the structure and a lot of gags, but we hired another writer, Erica Rivenoia, this really talented female writer who came in and wrote the actual script. So there wasn't as many jokes written as there was just making sure that we girls got to be funny for once. That we didn't stand there where some boy made a joke.
There's a Thanksgiving scene in this movie that's just the weirdest thing. It's not the usual family. Did any of that just get tossed around and happen on the spot, or was that all written in the script? Because it seemed to be...
No, that was a lot of that was improvised.
Yeah, because it seemed like the...
But Scott Frank's dialogue, again, reads like it really is happening. Mm-hmm. It's not the same clunky...
Who? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stuff you read.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You normally read.
Who was the, wasn't explained, I don't know, maybe I missed it, but who was that old guy when they're having the Thanksgiving?
Who Bones steers away?
Yeah, because it's...
Supposedly it was his farmhouse that they kind of... it's unclear whether... You know what, you have to ask Scott Frank that.
Oh, it's like a home invasion type thing?
It's either a home invasion or it's somebody's distant relative who they kind of know who... Whatever happens, you know he does not know what's going on, that guy.
Yeah, just a little bit.
He was so great, that actor. Sorry.
What was it like working with Matthew?
Matthew's hilarious.
He's funny, I know.
I mean, I'm not...
It's kind of a different role for him.
Yeah, and he did a great job, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
He's so charismatic. Is more, well, is similar to me in the fact that we're not method actors. Joe was, you know, stayed in character and had to isolate himself in a way in order to, you know, play such a, you know, a challenging character. Not that he did so, you know, at dinners in the evening. He was, you know, he's the loveliest guy. But Matthew, I would at least stay vocally in character through the day, just keep my American accent up. But Matthew was hilarious because one moment he'd be this, you know, Gary, this, you know, mean, hard, sort of charismatic, but, you know, dark guy, and then he'd cut and he'd be like, all right, like this charming English, you know, happy guy. So it was funny. Two very different people every day.
You were saying before that you didn't really, you know, that you don't have a goal in terms of, you don't map out your career, but when you look back at sort of your earlier stages of your career, was Hollywood a goal for you, or was it...
No, in fact, I know that a lot of Australians have... is somebody beeping and is something going wrong? Does anyone want me to... Should I press anything? There's a lot of red lights. Is it that one? It's hard to tell, isn't it? Oh, well. No. And, you know, and a lot of Australians come out to the States with those ambitions, but weirdly enough, I only came out on the back of Scooby-Doo, for the premiere of Scooby-Doo. And then ended up getting representation and kind of ended up, you know, getting a job almost straight away. So I was fortunate in that I didn't have to come out to LA and join a queue of how many people and, you know, try to get work. You know, I came in on the back of what was deemed as a big studio movie that had extraordinary success. And
are you happy living here in LA?
Well, I don't really live here. I live, 50% of the time in London and Europe.
That's good to have a balance.
Yeah.
But you grew up in Perth, which is the most isolated
city in the world.
In Australia.
Yeah.
Perhaps in the world. I mean, it was a different growing up there from growing up in Melbourne or Sydney or Canberra.
Well, I was also growing up at the same time in Melbourne and Sydney, Canada. No, I'm joking. I don't know. I didn't grow up in those other places. But I definitely think that Perth was a very... it was an isolated place to live. But I had a great upbringing. You know, I rode horses and had a very outdoorsy life that I don't know if I would have had the same opportunity to in Sydney or Melbourne.
And you were also born You were born in Vermont?
Yeah.
How long did you live there for any time?
No, I lived there for, I think, 9 months, just till I was, 9 months old. Yeah.
Did Sasha talk to you about his honor at the Israel Film Festival last week? And I thought that was very nice that he accepted and Nir was very excited he was there.
I was coming, and then at the last minute, we had family in town, and I had to look after them.
Yeah. did he talk to you about the honor that he was gracious to accept?
Oh, of course, he was very honored to accept. He's very honored. Yeah. His mother's Israeli.
Yeah. I was curious if you could talk about, I don't know if you mentioned already the plot of this thing you wrote with Amy Bowler.
It's essentially, it's essentially two girls who, it's a little like Dumb and Dumber with two women. And I guess we're these really deluded, overconfident dum-dums who fall in love with the band and we believe that they share the same love for us, and we run their fan club, and it's called Groupies, and we are the world's worst groupies, but we think that we are, king of the mountain.
Why are you the worst? Why are you the worst?
We're the worst groupies because we never get into the VIP section, even though we've been going for 15 years. The band have restraining orders out on us, and we have no idea. We think that they love us. It's a classic, very broad, comedy idea. But
5 minutes.
What's your own relationship with groupies? Do you have really rabid fans out there that you've had odd experiences with?
No, I mean, during Wedding Crashers, I had a lot of women come up to me and say, "Oh, your character in that movie is exactly the same as me. It's so good to see it." And I was like, okay. That was the only thing that was interesting to me, how many women really related to Gloria. Because when I was reading Gloria, she was so absurdly mad. It was amazingly funny. That's where all the comedy came from. So to meet people who proudly owned those characteristics was definitely amusing.
When is your own wedding going to take place?
I don't know yet.
No plans?
Not yet.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there any plans, or I'll just throw it out there, of you guys working together?
I don't see why not. I mean, there's no plans, but I think all couples really end up collaborating on things anyway. We end up helping each other out, and I happen to love reading scripts, so I do a lot of script reading. I don't see why not. Maybe.
Are you ever concerned, because he really puts himself out there, and as he does future projects, I know he's going to do Bruno, and I'm sure he's going to do other things. Are you ever concerned about when he's filming on location with that kind of a you know what I mean?
I guess it's like, anyone with a, relationship with someone who, does things that, create slightly, situations. I just, I try not to think about it.
Joseph said when you came on the set in Winnipeg, it had a whole different feel to it because
there was no women.
Right. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about, when you went out, what you brought to it?
There were a lot of men, and it was just me. And I'm lucky, I grew up with brothers, and so I'm very comfortable in that role. And it definitely got very good at pool. My pool got better.
Now, is it a different experience for you than going on to a lot of women, with working with Amy, it's going to be more of a women's side? I mean, do you see that as more of a different...
I think it always depends on the men, and there's nobody in this movie had that frat boy humor that isolated women. There was no sort of misogynism or sex. There's nothing that, that can happen in movies where, the boys' club happens and it's very isolating, and I've definitely experienced that. But that wasn't the case. Every man in this movie, starting with the captain of the ship, Scott Frank, is extraordinarily intelligent and sensitive and respectful of all human beings. So I never really felt, any different from anyone else.
Do you think you were like one of the guys accepted with them, or do you think they held you in esteem because you were the only female on the set?
I don't know. I mean, you know, no, because Tinsel worked with me a lot, the girl who plays Maura in the movie.
Oh.
So she was with me, so I know, and we all spent a lot of time. No, I gotta say, I don't know really how they saw me. It definitely didn't stand out to me that it's only now that you mention it does dawn on me that I was the only girl.
Were you a better pool player than something?
Hell yeah. I'm from Perth. Misspent youth.
Thanks, guys.
Oh.
Thank you.
What's
your next project?
I have a movie out called Hot Rod, and then after that I have a movie called Definitely Maybe with Rachel Weisz and Abigail Breslin.
How was it working with Andy Samberg?
I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm very excited to see it. I think I'm going to get to see the... I'm going to take the rest of this. Is that wrong?
Go on.
I think I'm going to get to see the movie either this week or next week. So I'm very excited.